everybody, and welcome to the Mini PC Show, Episode 4. My name is Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, owner, operator, proprietor, guy behind the curtain in Podnuts. I am joined today by Brian, Ask a Computer Guy. How are you doing, Brian?
Hey, Door. Not too bad. I'm really psyched to be here.
Yeah, glad you're back. We all have things that pop up. We all miss podcast because life is a priority. Podcasting is fun. So, you know, it happens to the best of us, trust me. We're also joined again by Eric R. Dini. How's everything going, sir?
Everything's going good today. Tomorrow, I may have a different story because tomorrow I got to go to a stress test.
Oh.
Yeah. Not a big deal. It's just because I thought I had that grabber last week and now they want to follow up. And they just messed my day up today, though. They told me I couldn't have any caffeine today because my test is tomorrow. And then I found out about 4 o'clock today that was all BS. I was just fine. I could have had all the caffeine I needed. So that's
maybe that was the stress test, seeing how you would react to that.
Yeah, I didn't react well, actually, when I confronted her about that on the phone. So, yeah, good test, lady.
Good test. Is it the treadmill test?
Yeah.
Oh, lordy, lordy. Good luck, sir.
No x-rays or nothing. Just straight treadmill. That'd be easy. I'll probably break it with my speed.
If you say so. Okay. Good, Brian?
I was going to say, I'll probably end up passing out myself. I'm not too much of a runner.
My running life was literally like now 3 lifetimes ago. And I have snow coming. Thankfully, my father-in-law is giving me his old electric snowblower. So the chance of heart attack should decrease.
Yeah, you've got some major snow coming. Like 3 days straight. Oh, you're going to feel like you're an Illinois Door.
I don't believe him. Okay, this is Maryland, late January. I don't believe weathermen, ever. They lie. They lie, they lie. If they say we're getting 2 to 3 feet, typically we get a half an inch. If they say we're getting a half an inch, we either get nothing or we get 3 feet.
Well, I'll tell you what. My weatherman, he said his model, he said, I don't believe this model, but the model that the computer is showing for me says just northwest of Washington, D.C. is supposed to get 7 feet of snow. That was yesterday. Now, today it was revised to 2 feet of snow.
7 feet. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's what the computer model said at first.
I know, Eric, but I can't move further south. It's too hot.
That's not a problem.
Okay, we're still playing cleanup in our notes from all of the CES stuff. And here is one link that I think Brian might have put in the notes. For CES and Amazon, supposedly, rumors are the Amazon Echo is going to go through a refinement where it's going to be smaller, cheaper, and portable. I don't have an Amazon Alexa Echo thingy. First off, I hate the fact you can't change the call word, but if it's smaller, that alone might be enough to make me want to get one. But you already have one. Am I right, Brian?
Yeah, yes, I do, and I love it. I love that device so much, and it's such a simple, basic unit when you do the teardown to see what's inside. But, man, is it magical. And, you know, the reason why I say that is because as soon as I got it, I didn't tell anyone. I tucked it into the kitchen, slid it into the corner. You know, I generally play music anyways, but typically had it running for, I would say, a good 48 hours before anyone actually noticed that I was playing, you know, music with voice response. And sure enough, you know, once they did notice, the kids jumped right in, started giving their commands. It didn't take long for them to realize, you know, how easy it is just to pull up content. The one thing I don't like about it, and I don't like the parental controls. You know, they don't seem to have parental controls. Now, I have a wide variety of music that I listen to. When I say wide, I mean from Baroque music, classical, opera, hip-hop, country, just a very wide variety of music. So when I say to Alexa, shuffle music, you know, out comes something that's not appropriate for the kids to listen to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I voiced my concerns with Amazon, and, you know, I'm sure they're in the process, I'm sure, to correct it. And to add some parental control somewhere down the line. But as it stands right now, you need to be very selective on the commands that you say.
Yeah. To stop and think about it, I don't know if I have parental control on my Google Play music when I tell it to play music. I think now what I did purposefully a while ago, I have 29 days worth of audio uploaded to my Google Music from all my Winamp and Napster days. And what I started doing years ago was anytime I was listening to one of my songs and it was not appropriate for kids, I literally gave my own music a thumbs down because I knew it would still be in my library. I could still add it to my music, but it would be less likely to play it randomly. But that's the best I think I could figure out.
I think it would be neat right when you first hear the song begin. Alexa, what are you thinking? There's kids in the room, and then it switches or something. Now, I had to do a return to Amazon. So I actually got a customer service agent on the phone yesterday, the day before, and I got my return process and all this because something just never showed up, and I waited a month for it. So while I'm on the phone with her, I ask her, I go, hey, could I order the new Amazon Echo while I got you on the phone? She's like, I don't know anything about new Amazon Echo. And I'm like, well, she goes, well, let me look. And she said that, she says, it doesn't say anything about it being new. It's got 3,000 reviews, but it's not available until January 26th. So I'm like, well, that just, what it means is that'll be the day. I kicked myself for never taking them up on the $100 Echo offer the first time. I so hope they offer that again this time around.
Well, yes, but I'll say this. There's two features about this new quote unquote Amazon Echo that is being rumored that I really do like. One is for the paranoid person in me and for all the paranoid people out there, which is the new one is going to be quote unquote like a beer can and have a button on it. So it will not listen to you until you press that button. So the paranoid skeptic person thinks that's fantastic. Me, I think it's okay. I'm not going to go either way. But
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I was going to say the second feature is the one that I really do like, which is that it has a battery in it. Now, here's my logic. I have it tethered to my phone. I literally bring it to work. In meetings, I set it on the table. And then when someone asks a question that I know is just a Google search away, I can then hit the button right in the meeting and say, Alexa, how much wood can a woodchuck chuck wood, whatever, and have it answer it. So it's the definitive source. I didn't say this. Alexa said this. So I'm honestly thinking of it like that, and which will officially make me the most annoying person in any meeting.
He's got that Alexa backpack on again. Look out. He's going to ask it questions. Watch this. Brian, what would you say, and this is one thing that worries me with being smaller, what would you say that the sound quality is like in the Echo, the original one you have?
I think the sound quality is phenomenal. I really do. I own several miniature speakers, you know, the size of a sphere, the size of a half of a beer can, and some do good, some do not so well. I think the Amazon Echo is very ideal for someone who likes listening to music. It's not overpowering, where you know it's not going to replace your surround sound system in the living room by any means, but it will provide decent quality music with a good bass level. And I enjoy bass. It's not extremely heavy on bass, but it's got a decent bass level.
Well, I've heard that, you know, that it sounds really good. And I would be worried that by making it smaller, they would have to cut down the size of the like subwoofer that's in there or the speakers in some way, and then it may not sound as good as the original. That was something that scared me a little bit about the new size.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you on that one too. And taking the listening option away, I know. For some folks, I know you mentioned, Dora, that you might be a little paranoid, but the convenience of having it always listening, I think, makes it that much better. Just because, you know, I don't know if you've seen the commercials, you know, when the wife's in the kitchen and she's cooking, she's got her hands all messy and she's asking it questions about measurement and so forth. And I've actually been there. been there doing that one thing. And making grocery lists. You know, my wife will say, let's start a grocery list and go to the grocery store, and we'll start spouting off things left and right, and not having to walk over to hit a button just makes that feature just that much better, you know, that always listening feature. So I'd like to see how that works.
Hopefully it's an option. Hopefully it's an option you can turn that on or off, you know, because I personally, right. I'd probably leave it wide open all the time too.
Now, when I first got it, I would ask it crazy things, you know, Alexa, open the podcast doors, you know, Alexa, where's my phone? Where's my keys? And when you open the app, you can give back feedback to the developers and say, hey, listen, this would be a great feature or this would be a great option. I think Find My Phone was one of the options that I thought would be really great. And what do you know? I was looking into the app just last week, I believe, and that feature was there, you know, Find My Phone feature.
Nice, and, yeah.
Yes, that's really, really good option.
I do got to give them kudos. It seems like the upgrades or the updates for it have been really nice, and they've added a lot of functionality since it first came out. Hopefully they keep doing that.
Amazon's history is very stereotypical in the sense of if they fail, they fail really fast. Amazon Echo, to me, from day one, wasn't failing anywhere. It's only gotten more popular as time goes on and getting more kudos as time goes on. I'm not really paranoid, but I'll say this. I know I said but. I can't have it upstairs in the kitchen because my wife and her family admitted to me one of the most frequent things she said in her teenage years and onwards when she lived at home with the family was, shh, TV. So if I have something in the kitchen playing, it will be very too easy to be heard out and disturbing her murder, death, rape TV. If the show at all has a murder, a death, or a rape in it, she's probably watched it before. So I couldn't put it upstairs. That's why, honestly, I almost like the idea of a portable one so I can bring it down here, put it in my thing. Or if I go on the road, I could have it. And that's the only place where I think push button could be helpful is if I'm out and about. You know what I mean? In the house, I don't want to have to hit a button for it to work because that is just a tumor. Mm.
I actually had a portable speaker and I took camping with me one year. And wouldn't you know, I left it behind. I was so distraught.
It was that bad of a speaker, huh? So I had the same thing happen too.
No, it wasn't that bad. I enjoyed it a lot. Very easy to carry around. I could put it in my pocket. You know, it was really had a good, nice bass level to it. Now that I think about it, yeah, it had a pretty decent bass level to it. So who knows? Maybe by making it the size of a beer can, that wouldn't be so much of a downer.
Gotcha. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Okay, let's take a look through the notes again. I know there was something here that caught my eye.
I did want to make one note that you can actually change the name from Alexa to Amazon, which I thought was kind of weird. But I'm waiting for the day where I can call it computer.
Ding! Exactly. Computer. That's just so unbelievably natural. It's like the flip phone Star Trek. Yes. It had to happen. Right. Okay. The one link I wanted to talk about in this show, when I posted it publicly, I almost got a little bit of flack for it. It was called The Ocean is a smartphone-sized, battery-powered server for $149 and up. So this literally looks like about the size of a portable USB battery pack for your phone. This is a pocket-sized server with 1 gigahertz processor, dual-core processor. So it's not a screaming beast of a machine. 1 gig of RAM, not a screaming beast of a machine. But it also does have built-in Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and a 4,200 milliamp battery. So this is basically like a Pi-type board embedded in with the Bluetooth, the Wi-Fi, and the battery power. And it comes shipped with a version of Debian Jesse Linux installed on it. For the one with 16 gigs of storage, it starts at $149. They are going to have higher versions, it looks like. But this, to me, is the same kind of principle. What I like about this isn't because I can have it sitting in my house running as a server. I have other devices for this. This is the kind of thing where I can literally carry it around with me and on the fly hit a button and bang, I have myself a portable Wi-Fi hotspot / server. I'm not sure if $149 is too much. I will say that. But either way, it interests me just because I like seeing these kind of innovations happen. So I'm a fan of this.
Dor, I'm joining your bandwagon here because I think this is a very ideal device. You know, this takes having a thumb drive to the next level, you know. This is brilliant.
Other thing that I like is you can either charge it via USB or using, I believe it's pronounced, Qi charging, QI wireless charging. So it's even the kind of thing where you can literally carry it around. Then when you get to the place where you're going, drop it on a Wi-Fi charging pad. And you don't have to worry about plugs and, you know, chaining it down, if you will.
Can your phone do this?
Depends on the phone. Yes. On to do this level of functionality on a real smartphone, it has to be Android that I know of and rooted, and then you can run an application called Servers Ultimate. The problem is, then you can't do Wi-Fi on your phone, because it will then take over your wireless on your phone and turn it into a Wi-Fi hotspot. So that's like the plus and minus with this. I'm not going to say this is solving any problem that I can really say is really bothering me right now, but it could be the kind of thing where I find the need for it and it's affordable enough that I just buy it anyway, but I don't know.
Yeah, the minute you need this, you'll be like, that's why they had made that thing that I talked about that day. This is exactly when I could use that, and I don't have
Here's what I'm looking at here. So we go on a lot of trips. My wife loves to do a lot of day trips during the summertime. So, and the kids, you know, we have the infotainment system in the minivan, but it really needs an overhaul. This device fills a need. So the kids can have their tablets, their smartphones, and I can take my content with me, plug it into this device, pop it on, you know, and they could stream their content via in the vehicle and watch their movies in their own little world with their headsets on without worrying about, you know, revamping my minivan. You know, think of the cost that I would have to put in the time to revamp my minivan or to go buy a new vehicle to install an infotainment system when I could spend something like this with a thumb drive and $140. You know,
I would normally say, well, you know, that's not my problem because I have unlimited data on my phone. But I learned a couple weeks ago, while I do have unlimited data on my phone, I do not have unlimited tethering on my phone. I'm using a OnePlus One Oxygen OS, can't buy it from my carrier, yet my carrier is aware of when I hit hotspot and what data is being transferred to that hotspot. So I only have 5 gigs a month I can tether. I had to take my kids to work on Monday. Monday was a state holiday. I got called in after my wife already left for work, so I brought the kids in. And then the whole time my kids were there, I thought to myself, if I had a brain, I would have something here. I would have already moved media to their devices, because the whole time they're there, all they want to do is watch videos. And I said to them, look, you can't abuse it. You cannot sit here all day and watch video, because you each have your own device and you each want to watch different things. That's twice as fast I'll be losing data. So we cannot do that. Where if I had something like this, I could simply take a whole season or whatever of their show, dump it on here, and then say, here, have at it. Don't worry about it. So yes, there is, I would say, a use case for me. It's not every day, but it's definitely more frequent than I would probably use a portable LTE hotspot.
Yeah. I don't have any tethering unless I pay ahead of time. It's like I got prepaid tethering. Unlimited data, but prepaid tethering.
Weird. Okay. That is.
And it's not a powerhouse. I mean, I'm looking at the dual core Cortex A7 processor. This does not need to have, you know, a quad core Tegra X1 to serve up, you know, movie content or files. So I think this is a very, very good little device. I'm curious, what was the feedback that you got when you ended up posting this?
Well, I got the almost, well, don't be lazy, Dor. Just take one of your Raspberry Pis and make your own, because it would cost me less probably. And they're right. But also wouldn't be as convenient, as I could hand it to my wife and say, when you have the kids, just turn this on. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's one of those, to me, it's one of those money versus convenience things. Yes, I could do it, but I would literally have to take duct tape and wind it around the Pi in the case and the battery and the external hard drive to you know, so she wouldn't lose pieces of it. And let's just say, A, that's not appealing, but B, it's just not good. She'd have to, because you know, there's no physical buttons. She'd have to literally unplug in the power to boot it up. And then when there's a problem, she wouldn't know what to do. She'll just drop it in the closest trash can.
Wow.
So I'll say, to me, one of the biggest things that have been making me make decisions with technology in my life isn't can I do it? Because the question, of course I can, but it's a question of, if I get this, is it also convenient enough for spousal approval? Like, this is the example of why I like Plex, Plex Media Server. Is it the best? No. Is it the fastest? No. Is it the cheapest? No. Is it the most flexible? No. But it's the one that my wife can use without, you know, complaining to me about how difficult it is. So that's what I use for now.
Yeah.
Mom's happy. Everyone's happy.
Happy wife, happy life. And if someone says I'm wrong, yeah, I'm sorry. I have a different experience than you.
I've lived that way for a long time.
Right. Now, here's another link in the notes. It's called 3dprinterchat.com. Okay. Now, here's the hypothetical. Okay, Brian. Hypothetically, I can get a 3D printer and I can design my own case and my own buttons and my own stuff. And I can put it all in one piece. Where I could have a physical button, I can have removable media, and I can have it automatically mount the media and automatically serve it up on DLNA or whatever servers. Mm-hmm. So if I had a 3D printer, it would be much more possible for me to do that kind of thing, but that requires the investment of a 3D printer, which is a lot of money, a lot more expensive than $149. So I stumbled across this. Something tells me I'm going to partake in 3D printer chat. Because I want to get good feelings out there of what is the best bang for the buck printer. I'm going to have to get one for this show to do projects every now and then. I think it's just a given. But do I have to spend $2,000 for a 3D printer? I'm thinking no. Let's take a look at phones now. Phones are coming out that are very respectable for $200-$300, where just a year and a half ago they were $700. I'm pretty sure I can get now a 3D printer for around $400 and have it be upgradable and reliable and do a good enough job that I could do these kind of projects in the future. So I stumbled across this site. I can't remember who kicked it my way, but 3D Printer Chat. It doesn't look like it's sponsored or owned by any company. So it should be semi-unbiased communications, and in typical heavy, hardcore nerd fashion, they even have an IRC chat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to quote unquote, keep it real.
I haven't gotten bit by the 3D printer bug yet. How about you, Eric?
Last summer, I stayed in a place up by Chicago, and it was neat. They had a Microsoft store and an Apple store right in the same block. Might have been the same mall. I don't know. They were real close to each other. Both of them had 3D printers going in the store. And I liked them. I saw what they were making. It was really cool. I'm pretty sure they were MakerBots, and they were $1,500 to $2,000, something like that. Now, we live in a pretty industrial area, and I've been to a lot of the factories around here. And I don't know if I talked about this on this show or another one, but all of the factories locally went out and bought them when they first came out, because they're like, oh, this is the future, man. It's no more, what would they call it? The new process is additive instead of,
right.
Oh, what do they call it?
Before you would take the lathe and take stuff off to make stuff, right. Which means you always need more. So the old adage was like, to make a toothpick, you need a tree.
Yeah.
That's the process. I can't remember. I know I heard the word, but yeah. Where this is the opposite. Instead of taking away, you're going to be building up.
Right. And all of them, without fail. And I don't know if there was one rep that went door to door around here and sold them all. Without fail, those never get used anywhere. And everybody who works there hates that machine. And they've never went back to upgrade and actually get something that works yet. A lot of them have just kind of shunned away from it because they got so burnt on their first one.
I think the technology is phenomenal. It really is. I'm not too sure where it would fill a need just yet in my personal life.
Well,
you know,
yeah, I will say I do think a huge problem with 3D printers is you get it, you have it build something, and then you go, that's kind of cool. Now what? Yeah. I mean, the only kind of daily kind of things I can see making is buttons. My button falls off my shirt. I don't want to go buy a button. No. I'm being serious, Eric. Maybe some kind of cell phone holder, maybe. Okay. If a piece to a drawer like breaks off, maybe you can 3D print something to fix that.
Now you're getting on the right track. I think that it would be a perfect thing for in the house, especially if you're doing remodeling slowly your house and you buy it when you first get the house. And then over time, you will print out all matching outlet covers and light switch covers. And you know, you'll, and they'll have your last name's letter in them, you know, or something. And they'll all look cool and, or, you know, just really fancy, nice things for your house. And you take, you know, maybe you don't use the color filament, but you take it out back and use some really fancy Rust-Oleum paint or something, make it look really cool, and then throw it up there. And that's where I see it. Little parts of houses. And like you said, door, like car parts, anything that breaks. But I really think it, for customizing, you know, people customize their rides all the time. To customize your house, you spend a lot of money on little tiny things that shouldn't cost that much, you know, like a chrome switch plate covers and things like little things like that. And you can probably print out your own chandelier, you know, or whatever, things like that. I see it in the future. Every house will have one and it'll just be there for whenever you won't go to the hardware store to buy something anymore. You'll just print it and
possibly,
and you'll print the Cheetos too.
Well, I think what needs to happen is the material. See, people who got in too early, the nozzles can only do certain types of material. And this, I think, is the crux. This is the hard thing. You have to be able to print something firm enough and strong enough to withstand certain things before it becomes truly usable in a wide variety of things. I think we're right there approaching that level. Okay, here's the 3D print I'm going to look at because we talked about this. I'm going to say it. Okay, I believe it's called Wanho Duplicator i3. It's now the last link in the notes.
Okay.
This gets really good reviews. Everywhere I've looked, when they say bad things about it, they always follow it up with, but this is the best $400 you'll ever spend on a 3D printer. It is by far the best $400 printer. It's also, everything in it is upgradable. You can upgrade the frame to make it more rigid. You can upgrade the nozzle to do different materials. You can upgrade the control set, the control deck, to enable you to do more with that. And if you watch one of the videos, you'll, and if they, and if they get close to it, what you'll be able to see is the things they're 3D printing. When they get up really close to it, you don't see the typical lines or rows of stuff because it's a 3D printed thing. You really can't tell these things are 3D printed. That's how good this thing is. It starts out $400. You can upgrade nozzles to make it equivalent to a $2,000 machine. Here's the limitation that I see with this device. You can only build something 8x8x7. And I think that's one of the biggest limiting factors with 3D printers is what's the three-dimensional sizes you can deal with. So now the question is do you take the time to figure out, if you want to make something bigger, how can you break it up into separate pieces and connect it? Or do you just order it out from somebody else?
Yeah, there'll be a program that'll make that decision very easy for you, I'm sure, at some point.
You would think sooner or later, but this is the one that I'm looking at. I don't know.
I think it looks good. I like how the drawer that it sits on, or I don't know, the base moves as well as right. The head. And I have some 3D printed things around here. But like you said, they do need a sand or something to finish them off when they're ones that the early ones do.
Right. And well, and yeah, everything I saw when they were done printing it and they zoomed up, like unbelievably close to it, you could not see any lines or anything.
That could be the material really, also too. That maybe well, it's not it
is. Hard. I'm sure it is. And here's the only thing that really is eking me to get into this. Part of my hobby passion is always the idea of having portable handheld something, war driving, gaming, some utilitarian thing in my pocket that I can flip a switch here, and start doing stuff with it. For me to do custom cases for custom mini computers that I want to carry around, I have a choice. Print them myself and learn how to do it myself and solder myself with, hopefully without burning my house down, or literally do, or outsource everything, which in the end will cost me a lot more money.
No, that's a good idea, Dor.
I try to justify it.
I'm with you. I give you permission. Do you need a permission slip for the...
I don't know. It's partially permission, partially confidence. But this looks cool. I will say that. Bottom line, even if I don't get this, this still looks like a really good 3D printer. Wanho, W-A-N-H-A-O, Duplicator I-2, I'm sorry, duplicator i3 V2 steel frame.
Have you looked into the programming of these? Like what Linux program are you going to use to 3D model and interface with this machine?
Well, to interface with it is one thing. To design and print, to design and layout is something else. To design and layout, you can use stuff like Blender. You can even use things like SketchUp, I believe, to do some preliminary things. But to print it and manage the printing, that I think is all in the device. You just take the standard output file from those applications, feed them in, and they just start to print.
So it's standardized. There's not a special thing then.
Okay. The input file is like back in the day when you would do printing jobs, you would print to, try to remember what it's called.
LPT1?
No, it was like a certain type of file format. Yeah. And basically, because all printers are stupid, and every print driver on a computer, all it really did was take your print job and convert it to that language for output.
Yeah, I think I don't remember. I can't remember what the output is either. But it's nothing unusual. It was something that's been around forever, the file format, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and there's plenty of places to go online to where I can either job out and say, look, here's my design. I want to do this. Tighten up my design and give me the output file to print. So, you know, this is the pizza analogy. You can make the dough yourself. You can make the sauce yourself. Hell, you can even make the pepperoni yourself if you want. Or you can buy the crust pre-made, get the sauce out of the can. Or you can even just call up and say, deliver me a pizza. Right. So my logic is I'm taking some of the control to most of the control down to my house, but there's still going to be things I want to have to rely on smarter people to do for me.
I'm sure. I guess it's not VRML was the one I was thinking, but STL is actually the more standard
format. St. Louis? I think they're moving to LA or something.
Yeah, it's true.
Right.
To build on that analogy, I always tell my kids, why do you want to go to McDonald's when we can make McDonald's at home? It's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's never the same thing.
No, your fries, the fries at home don't smell like that.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another link I wanted to just throw out there, guys. It's in our notes, and I believe it's just called Odroid Magazine. Okay, Arduino class of boards. You have the Raspberry Pi class of boards. Then you have the Odroid boards. Odroids are typically a different form factor, different shape and size. Some of them are Intel-based. Some of them have baked-in Intel processors kind of thing. So this is, I would say, a higher class of board. Not better, per se, but more along x86 type of processing things that go on. And now they have a quote-unquote magazine. And by now, as it turns out, they've had magazines for like over a year, and I didn't know it.
It's an impressive cover.
This is another
cover.
One of the... Sorry?
It's an impressive cover on this December issue where you've got how to build a robot goalkeeper. That's a heck of a board.
Well, yeah, but I'm pretty sure you're going to have to kick that ball pretty slow. Or directly at the robot. I'm just saying. I love the fact that they're basically putting these out. Okay. I kind of like the fact they call it a magazine, yet it's basically completely digital. I don't think there is a way you can get the physical copies of these, but I just like to see showcasing of ideas and technology. And that's really all this is. It's an organized showcasing of what you can do with Odroid boards. I know a couple people that have Odroid boards, and they're all pretty happy with them. Every time I hear them doing stuff, it is definitely more powerful than the normal Raspberry Pi kind of thing. They have like quad-core Intel processors and stuff on some of these. If you want to look at those, all you have to do is just go to odroid.com and you get automatically redirected to hardkernel.com.
These have big heat sinks and sometimes fans on them.
Yeah, and you know, once you see a fan on something, you're talking something else, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like to look into this more, though.
Comes with a warning, Eric. These are not like typically $10 or $20 or $30 boards. Sometimes they're $100 boards.
Yeah, I could see that.
which isn't bad as long as you're going to be able to do what you want with it, or what you're expected, I should say.
Right. So, yeah. And there is also PiMag, which is the Raspberry Pi focused magazine. I'm not a magazine person or a reader, but I look at these, and I look at these specifically for ideas, for inspiration, not necessarily to verbatim copy something, but just to see what kind of things are happening out there, learn some terminology and just seeing what other people are doing. And honestly, this is really, to me, one of the better ways to digest this content.
Yeah, and there's code right in here that you can look at and change. That's nice. I really like how much information they give you. I haven't looked at Magpie for a long time. Ever since I got rid of my Raspberry Pi, I have not been back there. But then, the last issue came with a free Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, you can get the Raspberry Pi Zero, and I actually finally saw a good use for the Raspberry Pi Zero.
Yeah,
because what I couldn't comprehend was people who would get the Raspberry Pi Zero and then figure out ways to put extra stuff on it, like Wi-Fi adapters. It's like, just get a Raspberry Pi, for God's sake. What is wrong with you? But I saw a guy, and it's going to be in the next MagPie. I saw a guy take a custom, I'm pretty sure, custom 3D printed Super Nintendo controller with a wire coming out of it, okay? The wire that came out of it split, and it split to be power and HDMI video, and the Pi, Raspberry Pi Zero, was in the Super Nintendo controller, and the controller had all the buttons, so you could single player old school emulation game play without connecting to anything else. So I thought that was really smart, really, and it was the same size as a Super Nintendo controller. It was no bigger, and that to me was the fantastic part. It looked like an old Super NES controller, and it was literally just one cable coming out of it, and voila, you have yourself Mario Kart and everything else.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that should be the next edition of the Pi Mag, but all the guy let out of the bag so far was just a picture on Twitter. Go figure.
I'm looking at this Odroid XU4 model, and that looks like some serious business. Like you said, it's got the fan on the processor there, two USB 3.0 ports. That's not a bad deal for $74. Not a bad deal at all.
Yeah.
Quad core, 815 Cortex processor. It's the Samsung Exynos processor, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Note 3 came with that processor.
Yeah, I could run TouchWiz maybe on that one then.
Well, they do have Android you can put on there, so technically yes. Yeah, that's why I'm a little bit afraid. I've never gotten an Odroid, and it's for that specific reason. Something tells me if I get one of these things, I'm going to figure out how much I can replace in other places. And I'm seriously tempted to take one of these things or kind of things and literally just go rogue. Go into work, plug this up to a monitor, keyboard and mouse, and do my work tethering to my phone, some of my work. See what kind of percentage I can do. And then I'm sure somebody will walk up and say, what the hell are you doing? But it could be cool.
Yeah, you got me thinking, Dor. Now, didn't you have an Odroid something?
Never Odroid. One buddy I knew, 5150, swears by his Odroid about how powerful it is and how quick it is and how good it is. But I've literally stuck my fingers in my ear. Nah, 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 nah. You know, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it because I have enough addictions I have to deal with right now. So I just didn't want to look directly at it. But this does look good. And a fan on it, listen, I'm okay with noise, okay? As long as I know it up front. So this has a fan on it. I could definitely deal with that because even our you are my friend, Eric Liam, said, when computers get this small, you put them on the back of the monitor. The monitor itself can shield you from a fair amount of that noise. So really, who's it bothering?
Yeah. When I see this, it makes me want to just tear apart my Android TV box and do something completely different with it.
Right. And I'll say the only thing that was lacking previously with Odroids back in the day, quote unquote, was their case selection was very limited. Or you had to quote unquote 3D print your own cases. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for my sanity, it seems like they fixed that issue now, where you can go on their website and you can get multicolored cases for literally $2 or like $5.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
Just feeding that addiction.
It is. And they even offer you the DWG file, which is the AutoCAD file, or the STEP file for 3D printing right there on the website. Okay, let me tell you something. That, to me, is a beautiful philosophy. Seeing a company say, here, you can buy our stuff, or right down on the boobity-boobity, you can get your own, print it yourself. That, to me, is good. That just shows good faith, if you will. Man.
Yeah, buy that board, and here you go.
No,
I'm not talking to you, but from the company to their customer.
I think you're talking to me.
Well, they should have a link to the good 3D printer to print that case off for you too, then.
Well, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to make sure these links are in the notes as well. Just so if you people out there have the same problem I have, go ahead, click the links. They'll be in the notes. Go ahead.
Yeah, this, yeah, door.
I know. Okay, before we all just start sobbing and crying in a corner, is there any more links you guys saw in here?
I don't have a link. I have a story, though, that I wanted to share with.
Like stories.
Yeah, well, it's just the story has no ending yet, though, so we'll see how it goes. So I was an Indiegogo supporter of an Arduino board. It was called the B-Shield. I gave them $75. And it came with I think it was an Uno, and then this shield and a touchscreen display and things. And anyway, they never delivered. So after about a year, one day somebody said, "Hey, this is our make good on these. Here's $75 credit to this website called Gadget Cat." I'm like, oh, okay. So I tried. I think I was going to order a Raspberry Pi 2 from there and some other stuff. And my order went through, it took my coupon code, and then I never got a confirmation of the order at all. And then I tried it again, the coupon code says it's already been used. Well, yeah, that's good. And then so I emailed the person, and they're like, she was going into maternity leave or something, the person who takes care of it. So anyway, here's 3 months later, and I went up back on the website, and like, because I found out that my Arduino board that I ordered from Amazon, I didn't look too close when I ordered it. I figured it was Prime or something. It won't be here till the end of February. And here we are in the middle of January. So I put an order together. I used the code again at this Gadget Cat, and it worked. So I've got $75 worth of, I don't even know. I ordered a kit, and I ordered I believe it's a Wi-Fi or Ethernet adapter or something. Anyway, around $75 worth of stuff. And it confirmed the order, but we'll see how soon I get that one. I'm just, the thing is, I just totally threw that money away. I figured the Indiegogo's over. I lost my money. You know, shame on me for being so trusting in a company. And then I may be redeemed on it. We'll see.
Well, I'll say anything on Indiegogo or Kickstarter is like walking down the street and having a guy say, "Hey, you like watches?" You have no idea who you're talking to. You have no idea if he's going to sell you a lemon or he's actually in hard times and just needs to get rid of something. You really honestly don't know.
Right.
But here's the only difference. I've been really selective about what I back here for like the last year. The only people I've backed are people who have already delivered on previous Kickstarters or Indiegogos. And that's it. Because all I keep hearing is these horror stories from every podcast I've ever listened to of, oh, well, if I had every dollar I had back that I put in Indiegogo, maybe we all as humanity need to be a little bit more particular, I'll say.
Yeah, I this was the second round with the same product, though. He had already done one Indiegogo, successfully went through and delivered. This was a slight revision from the original, though. Well,
I put the correct link in our chat, Eric. I really don't understand. I mean, don't you have patience or anything? I mean, the campaign closed January 22nd, 2014. I mean, do you expect them to like do this like that quickly? Oh wait, it's 2016.
Wait, you put the link to the B shield?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was.
Yeah, just so you can look at the screenshot again and see. Oh look, there it is. Yeah.
That's absolutely the one. Yeah, that's SmartMaker. That's the one I was part of. And he made, you know, $42,000 off of 902 of us.
Now, what happens with that money? Do they just walk away with it, or
that's a possibility? They can. I mean, if they're shameless, I guess.
Yeah, I will say this is like the guy on the street. The same analogy applies to Weir. There has been companies in the past, like Jala, I want to say was one of them, who they're at least trying to give back a percentage of the people their money because they've realized that we can't do this. Some people just disappear. Some people are the middle ground, best effort. Look, I'm trying. You might not get yours. You might not get yours kind of thing. They're trying best effort. But the people who are prepared typically give it away. Now, I'll say, here's my golden rule. Hardware is physical goods is the most difficult thing to do in scale, period. So if they say they can do something revolutionary or like really ridiculously hard or totally unique compared to anyone else, that's when I'm a little bit of a, maybe I'll just wait till after the Kickstarter and after everyone gets their stuff and after they become a real product. And then I can buy them on demand kind of thing product. Just because after hearing everyone who I know who watches Shark Tank, the physical line is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we talked about a lot of notes, a lot of good things here, guys. I'm just going to throw it out there. If you take one more glance through the collection, do you see anything else piquing your interest? And while you say that, I'm going to say there is another video in here, and it's a 2-minute and 51-second video from TechCrunch that was put up about a week and a half ago, and it's the Endless Mini, the $79 desktop computer. This is the kind of coverage that tells me this thing has a much higher possibility of being successful.
That's the one that Brian brought.
Is the ball one.
Yeah.
Well, I was listening to the CEO give his explanation at CES just a couple of days ago, and his philosophy was pretty much that was getting a working PC in the hands of the emerging markets of individuals that that can't afford one, and do it in such a way where it all depends on the kind of connectivity they have, whether it's minimal connectivity or no connectivity. The operating system would be pretty much loaded with like helpful information for them to use if they don't have any connectivity at all. I thought that was kind of brilliant.
Yeah, so where it actually it downloads a lot of internet things or it stores it locally. Is that what it was? And then you could surf the internet whether you got a connection or not. I was surprised by that. That's not something I had thought about before. Yeah, and it's a cool looking device.
Really cool looking. I do think that's how they have to, and dare I'm sorry for using these catchwords. That's how they have to differentiate. They have to somehow set themselves a little bit apart.
Yeah.
And I do think, dare I say, DVR-ish style, subscribing to content and then in the background downloading content so you can watch whenever you're ready kind of content, that to me has a severely big future. And the people who do it right are going to be successful, bar none. Doesn't matter if it's a $79 thing or a $500 thing. People will end up spending money for it, I do believe. I also like the fact that there is actually what looks like a desktop-like, basically, interface you can also use on this thing. Yeah. I'm hesitant on the Odroid. I'm bullish about the Endless Mini. I will say that.
Cool.
Well, the thing about mini PCs such as this, once you buy them, you're pretty much kind of stuck with the hardware that you purchase. So if you want to, say, upgrade the memory or get a different flash, storage device for the unit, unless it doesn't have some kind of SD card slot, you're kind of stuck with what you have. And, the price is very decent, and I think it's going to last, I'd say, about a couple of years, maybe a little bit more, depending on how you're using it. But, if you definitely wanted to upgrade to get something a little faster, you'd have to buy something else.
Right. I'm going to put the link here in the notes to endlessm.com. That's the actual corporate website. The Endless Mini is the one we keep looking at. $79 starts at $79. They also have a just Endless, not Endless Mini.
Yeah.
It's almost like 2/3 bigger. That one is $189. Starts out with 32 gigs of internal storage. Then they have a $229 version with 500 gigs of internal storage. So again, I like variety and choice without overwhelming people. So there's two versions of the base model, $79.99 for the mini. And then for the endless computer, two models again, $189 and $229. So I really do appreciate those simple choices, I will say that.
Almost reminiscent of the original iMac. Just starting to get yes. that look a little bit to it.
I agree.
Yeah.
What I'm mildly confused. Oh, here you go. You ready? Okay. Endless, the full endless, available immediately. So right now you can go click $189, bang, ship it, and I'll ship it. The endless mini, it says, ships within 2 to 3 weeks. So I think I know what I'm doing.
I'm gonna say if I'm going with the endless desktop model for the extra money, when you get to choose between a 32 gig and a 500 gig, for $40, I'm gonna go with the 500 gig for $40 more.
Absolutely.
I know. Well, $99 shipped in 2 to 3 weeks for the mini. Yeah.
Speaking of
upgrades. Okay, I think it's time to wrap the show up, guys.
Well, you were talking about upgrading, Brian. I just made an upgrade for my my Jive PC, my Jive OS PC, that project I was working on, where I was borrowing my daughter's frog-shaped USB 2.0. So I went to Walmart. I don't know if you guys, if Walmarts do the sale, like all Walmarts at the same time, but I walked into Walmart today and pretty much all of their flash drives were ridiculously low price. So I did buy a 32 gig USB 3.0 for, I think, $12, I think, something like that.
Nice.
Which I thought was good. And so I'll be putting that on that laptop and see if it makes it a little faster, which I didn't really notice it being slow before, but my daughter probably needs her flash drive more than me just doinking around with it anyway. So I'll give that back to her.
Right. Well, and as soon as we did that show, literally hours later, it seems like people were posting on Google Plus, at least, how you could then get Google Play on,
yes, yes,
on the x86 version of Jive. Now, here's what I didn't get. I think I got wrong, incorrectly. I assumed incorrectly, Eric. So you put it on the thumb drive. After that, you don't actually install it to the computer's hard drive.
Right. It runs off the flash.
It's like a live distribution.
Yeah. And it asks you when you first boot up if this is going to be like a one-time thing. Do you want to save apps back to your thumb drive? Well, I was running off an 8 gig thumb drive, so I was like, well, I can't really install Google Play and a bunch of apps on this little thumb drive.
True.
So that's why I needed a bigger one, and faster will be nice. And speaking of the Google Plus, if anybody hasn't joined us yet, the Mini PC Show Podnuts community is in Google Plus now, and I'll tell you what, the feedback already for only this we're recording our fourth episode. I'm just amazed by how much feedback we're getting in this community, and I thank everybody for reaching out to us.
Yeah, and I completely forgot, Eric. We have a couple emails. Do you want to read at least like one or two of them?
Well, I thought we did, but I think everything I've picked up one was in Google Plus. I don't know if we actually received email. Did we?
I did.
Did you?
Now that you say that, I did not realize if they sent it directly to me or to the correct website. Okay. So next show we'll look at that.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. And if you guys do have questions or comments and you want us to read them on the air, definitely send them to us. We are looking forward to your feedback.
Absolutely.
I recall someone had a comment about the Udo, which was similar to the Odroid.
That was Joe Licata, I think, who mentioned that. That was in Google Plus too. I thought that was an email too, but I think that was in Google Plus also. Google Plus is fine. We'll definitely respond quickly to you in Google Plus. We'll also respond quickly on email, but if you send the email, we'll read it on the show. Is that how we'll work that door? I mean, we could just read our Google Plus posts all day, but I think that'd be boring for a lot of people because they probably already read it.
Well, here's the way I'll go with that. Google Plus postings are meant to be shared amongst the Google Plus people in the crowd. Emails, to me, is a very direct, I intended this to be on the show type context. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you want things specifically on the show, shoot us an email, minipcshow@podnuts.com. That's the easiest way. And I'll make sure I have the link in the show notes, which now I don't know if I do or not. I'll check that out.
Cool.
Sounds like a plan. I did want to mention one more thing. We're talking about upgrading mini PCs. There, Dora, looks like you did add something to the show notes, the Dell Inspiron i3050 mini PC. And I was actually looking at that a few weeks ago. I think it was last week, I think about it. And I thought it was an interesting mini PC, not so much for the size, because it's obviously fits in the palm of your hand, but you can actually upgrade the memory and the solid state drive in this little device. I just thought that was, I just thought that was a really, really neat little thing to do for $172 sitting on Amazon right now. It's got 2 gig of memory, comes with a 32 gig solid state drive, and it's like wireless AC, which isn't bad, not bad at all. Two, right. Dual band wireless port, USB 3.0. Two USB 2.0 ports, HDMI, not HDMI 2.0, but it'll still do, I'm sure, 1080p video, which is not a bad device.
Right. Yeah. The number one question on the, at least the link I have in the notes is it fanless? Answer, no. I understand why some people put that as a heavy priority, but this is the convenience thing. This thing has upgradable parts to it. That alone adds, to me, significant long-term value to it. I don't know what the maximum RAM is, but they make it sound like 4 gigs, which if it maxes out at 4 gigs, I would be shocked.
No, I think it's 8. I think 8 was the max. From the review when I was looking at it, I think you can put a single 8 gig stick in it.
So it takes a regular-sized laptop?
Yeah.
Stick of RAM? Nice.
Wow. And it does high end audio pretty well too as well. So that's really good for the home theater enthusiast that's looking for a small front end box that'll do high end audio very good with 1080p video.
This is definitely one of those devices, I think, because it's Dell, they're not just hopefully not just let it flounder and fall off, but they'll slowly innovate more to it. Like Vista mounting, it looks like they plan on doing on the next rev of this. This to me could be that quote unquote perfect office replacement computer.
It's been quite a few years since I bought a Dell, and I bought that tablet, the Dell Venue tablet. It's been a great little machine. It's an Atom processor in it, runs really well, and I'm glad to see them going in this direction.
Very cool.
I mean, I guess HP kind of did too with those colorful little
Streams, but the Streams aren't really upgradable. They're really almost consumable type devices. Okay, we've went just about an hour. Brian, is there anything you want to end off with?
I do, but I don't want to. I just can't stop looking at these devices, man. My mouth is drooling. I think I'm addicted to as well. No, I'm going to stop right here.
Okay, Eric, do you have any closing remarks?
I just want to thank everybody for listening, and thank you for all the comments from the first three shows. So I really like hearing that kind of feedback. It sounds like a lot of people are also into this mini PC thing that we've adopted here. We're not alone in this quest for information, it seems.
Absolutely. I will make sure that the notes have the things that I said they had in them. Also, I'm going to throw out there, we are going to start a Patreon. What the rewards are and the levels are is unclear yet, but I can tell you at least some of the ideas I'm having. Early access to the audio, access to video of this show, so you can actually see the Odroids and see the Endless Computers when we talk about them. The ability to watch live as we record is another option. Merchandise being available for everyone. So if we get enough people, then we can do shirts, we can do hats, we can do polo shirts, we can do all kinds of stuff. Not mouse pads though, because really, do we really need mouse pads in 2016? But if you have ideas out there, what could be good rewards or levels for Patreon, please do not hesitate. MiniPCShow@podnos.com and let us know, or hit us off in the Google Plus community. I want to thank everyone for downloading, everyone for subscribing, and thank everyone for all the support that you give Podnuts. We will talk to you next week.